Hey, this is Colin Mitchell, four-time founder and podcast host. I've been in the sales game for a long time. And if you want to learn how to transform your sales team from order takers to quota breakers, significantly increase your revenue, and create scalable sales systems, you should be listening to the Authentic Persuasion Show with my good friend, Jason Cutter.
Welcome to the Authentic Persuasion Show, a place where business and thought leaders come to weigh in on important sales-related topics that you can use in your sales career and life. I'm your host, Jason Cutter. My mission is to get your help in changing sales from something prospects fear to an act of service they actually seek out and appreciate. Whether you're in sales, leading sales teams, or own a business, I hope this helps you improve your selling effectiveness and you can go out into the world as an authentic persuader. On the Authentic Persuasion Show with me is Colin Mitchell. I'm super excited. I'm always excited for all my guests, but Colin is a four-time founder, passionate about sales and serving others. His current ventures include Monster VoIP and Salescast. He loves everything about sales and still makes cold calls for fun. In fact, we were talking about that right before we got on to record. And I love that he's a practitioner, not just a founder who wants to help people, but he does it himself. In his free time, he loves outdoor activities with his three kids, his beautiful wife. He is an amazing podcast host, which is why I'm excited for this, not just because he's had me on his show twice, and I definitely owe him. And if the past is any indication, we're going to have a lot of fun talking about sales. Colin, welcome to the Authentic Persuasion Show.
Oh, wow. That was a fantastic intro. You made me sound way more interesting than I think I am, but I think we're going to have fun.
And like I said, I owe it to you because you made me sound very interesting twice on your shows. And so there's a lot to live up to on my side hosting you now. Where I wanted to start this conversation is talking about, I had a whole bunch of stuff prepared and I'm just going to skip past it all, is you have something where you have listed that you shifted in your business and your mantra mentally from ABC to what?
To ABH, always be helping. So yeah, I mean, this is an interesting thing that comes up. For some reason, it's always something that stands out to people when they peruse my profile, I think, because it's in there in my bio, right? So when I started out in sales, and I think we talked about this, I definitely had some really strong commission breath. Like you could smell it from miles away. That was what I was taught. I was just grateful for the opportunity that I got. And I just did what I was told. Some of it was good. Some of it wasn't. The training consists of like, here's the script. Here's the list of names. Don't use the CRM because it doesn't work. Literally, my leads were on 3x5 cards. Like that's how I made cold calls. And it was a classic script. It was just warm them up with some crap like happy hump day or happy Friday or how was your weekend? You know, some crap like that. You try to build that rapport, act like you really care. And then it was go into the pitch, the value proposition, and then lead to an offer. And the offer was to buy a certain quantity of the product at a certain price. And if they said no, it was go back with another offer and then change the subject and then make your final offer. And if they didn't buy, then you better get a commitment for a future order. And that was the script. It was very much not bringing yourself into the conversation. It wasn't really caring much about the other people on the other side of the phone other than just getting the sale. And it was all about being on the top of the numbers on the board and building your commission check. And I learned some bad habits early on and they basically took me so far. And I did the classic thing that every young salesperson does, which is just start parroting. Hey, he's putting up a lot of numbers on the board. I'm going to start saying what he's saying. And that landed me some sales. I was like, I'm going to keep saying that. Sounds like it's working. Until somebody with a little more experience and a little bit more willingness to be honest and actually care about the prospects, I'm, hey, you should really stop saying that. And I said, why? It's working. And he said, yeah, but it's not true.
What does that have to do with anything?
Yeah, but it's getting the sale. I don't understand.
Why do you think that just continues to be a thing in organizations with how they onboard salespeople, what they're taught, and the direction they're pointed at? Because I'm going to guess that wasn't too terribly long ago, and or you see that still happen in organizations.
Oh, it definitely happens. Around. Like, you know,
why?
Because people just, I guess, have a hard time being honest, being authentic. like a lot of companies, they're small and they don't want people to know that they're small, but there's advantages to being small, a smaller company. Not everybody wants to do business with the biggest name in that specific industry, because the smaller people are going to take better care of them. They're going to care more. They're going to be more flexible. Sometimes it's easy to just get caught in that place of like saying what you got to say to get them to the next step or the yes. And those bad habits are still taught today. I didn't get out of that or transition to that really until when I took a VP of sales position. I started to kind of transition. And this is where I kind of went on a path of like, I didn't really have any great sales leadership or great training. So I had to listen to podcasts. I had to read books. I had to take trainings. I had to follow coaches that were putting free content out there and do things like that to really invest in myself and do better and become better at my craft. And there is where I really started to understand like really selling can be serving and helping others. And when that happened is when things really changed for me and I no longer felt like I had a ceiling. And I've tried to stick with that and ingrain that in anybody that I cross paths with that works with me or alongside me and something that's really important to me.
And going back to my first part and what was in your bio is that instead of ABC, right, always be closing, which is the classic Glengarry, Glenn Ross, Boiler Room, Wolf of Wall Street type of mode, to always be helping, your ABH mode, which is then, like you said, it's an act of service. It becomes your duty and responsibility when you can help somebody to help them. And if you can't help them, to not help them and not force them to buy or manipulate or trick them into it or hit them with the hard close three times, like you said, and change the subject, then go back to it and get a, yeah, no, like, yes, that works short term, never long term.
Yeah. And there's going to be a lot of people that probably disagree with this. There's a lot of people that still be always be closing. That's the way to do it. That's what works. Why are you trying to change it? And that sort of attitude is really what limits. Those limited beliefs are really what can hold you back from your full potential. And sometimes, like you said, I want people to really pay attention to something you said that's so important is always be helping is sometimes not helping.
Yeah.
And what that means is like, hey, I'm not the right fit. We cannot solve the problems that you have, but you know what? Here's some resources or here's some people that might be able to. And I've done that a number of times where I've spent time on opportunities where just it came to the point where we were not the best fit, but I knew who was the right fit. And I was happy to direct them in that way and not expecting anything in return for it.
And I think that's always the key, right? And that shift, when I look at it from a higher level, which I know you feel as well, which that going from the ABC, going from that old school strategy that people still do to what you're talking about is shifting from this scarcity, like I've got to pick up every berry I can, or I'm going to starve to death, right? Like it's 10,000 years ago and we're in survival mode versus abundance, which is in reality, there's 8 billion people on the planet. How many of them do you need to be your customer, right? How many do you really need to be your customer?
Oh, I mean, I'd love all 8 billion, but I like to shoot high.
Maybe just half.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I'd be okay with half. No. Yeah. I mean, the thing is there's a mind shift that happens with that. And I'm a big believer in karma. And if you're forcing things to work and you're not really helping people, but you're just serving your own selfish needs, which is growing that commission check, things are going to be hard. It's always going to be a struggle. But when you shift that mind to really helping and serving others, things just start to happen and click and seem so much easier.
Yeah, I totally agree. The karma part's good. And then there's this untold part, which I try to help people realize too, which is when you tell somebody no, because it's not a good fit, sure, that's an opportunity, but it wouldn't have been a good customer anyway, even if you had talked them into it, they probably would have canceled or complained or been unhappy. But the other shift is that when you tell people no, when you really mean it, when somebody needs what you have and you tell them yes, and you really are pushing them forward with persuasion from a helping service standpoint, if it ever comes up with, you just want me to do this because you're going to make money on it. It's like, no, if this wasn't a good fit, I would have told you no already. I'm pushing you because I want to help you.
Yeah. The interesting thing is, though, sometimes when you tell people no, it makes them want it even more. Yeah,
there is that part,
you know,
right?
And you got to stay firm with, we are not the right fit. Because I've come across this where we've said, hey, we are not the right fit. And it's like, I don't understand. Like, can't we just make this work? And the answer still has to be no. That greed will pop in. And it's like, hey, they want to pay me money. I got to take it. But, you know, yeah, it will come back to bite you. And I've learned this from experience. Sometimes that's the only way that some people are going to learn. We can talk about this till we're blue in the face. And there's some people that are still going to go out there and just have to fall on their face before always they're willing to change or do something different.
Yeah. And the thing is that you're talking about the honest no is not a takeaway strategy to try to get your way, right? Like, you're not doing a takeaway to try to get someone to realize they do want to date you. Like, no, you don't want to date them. Like, no, go away. This isn't a good fit.
Yeah. And the thing is, it's best to find that out early on, right? You don't want to find that out halfway down the sales cycle. Like, you got to be good at your discovery to really find out, are we a good fit? Are we going to solve some sort of problem for them? And the problem is most people stop there. Like, hey, we found a problem, or we made them think they have a problem, or hey, this is kind of a problem. Price is not a problem. Like, pain, like problem that has an impact to them personally, to their department, to their organization, to their goals, that has an impact that's going to actually motivate them enough to actually go along that journey and go through the change that nobody wants to deal with of signing up for your product or service.
Exactly. Where do you see persuasion fitting in? So far we've talked about being authentic and serving and helping, telling the wrong people no. What about when it's time to go forward? Where do you see persuasion coming in with your sales style?
Yeah, I mean, I think persuasion, a lot of people think it's like a bad word, and it's not. If it's used properly or done right with a good intention, it's a skill that will serve you in many areas of your life, both professionally and personally. Right. You know, I've got to persuade my wife sometimes to do certain things. I've got to persuade my kids that they need to eat their vegetables. I've got to persuade them that it's time to brush their teeth. And there are certain reasons why we have to do that, right? But it's a lot easier to persuade somebody when your intention is good and you know why you want them to go where you want them to go or do what you want them to do, because you can validate it with those positive reasons. Like, this is how it's going to benefit you. This is why we're going to do this. This is why it's worth dealing with the change or dealing with this that may be uncomfortable. And it's a necessary skill set for any successful sales professional.
And of course, I love that you said relative to sales, business, and not business, right? Because everything in life is sales, selling, persuasion, somewhere in there, right? For all of it. And the key is what you said too, is that it's about the other person, right? It's not about you need to tell your kids to brush your teeth because that's what we do and it's my way or the highway. It's like, no, here's why you need to do it. Here's why it's important to you. Trust me. Hopefully you trust me with that built around there. And then the business side, I mean, it's really, like you said, leading up to this is all, what's in it for them? Like, what do they want? How will it benefit them and help them achieve their goals, right?
Right. Now, there's some key pieces to that, right? If we're relating it to specifically business sales professionals, like, you got to have the right tools to be able to persuade them to go where you want them to go on whatever that journey is for whatever product or service that you're offering, right? Because change is uncomfortable. Nobody likes change. Even when they know that it's going to benefit them, they still don't like change. It's like everybody who says, I know that if I lost 20 pounds, I'd feel better and be great and feel better about myself or have a better attitude or whatever the case is, right? But a lot of those people still are not consistently at the gym doing the work to shed the weight, right? So even when people know that something's going to benefit them, they're still reluctant to change. So with a proper discovery, with a proper either disqualifying them or not early on, that's where you can arm yourself with the proper information, the proper tools to continuously remind them why we're going on this journey together.
How often do you end up bringing up those things from discovery in your conversations?
All of the time. Everything that we do after discovery is framed around what we found out in discovery. I mean, we're even trying to take it deeper and create playbooks around the discovery. So what that looks like is, a simple example is, you got to take great notes, number one. And there's tools to help you with this. Record your calls, transcribe your calls, transcribe your Zoom calls, your Google Meet calls, whatever you use, record them, transcribe them, get them in the CRM. Put them in there in a way that's going to help you to continue to have a meaningful conversation and relationship with your prospect through the sales journey. Number one, don't just do a standardized demo or standardized playbook, sales track, whatever your sales process might look like. Customize what you do and what you say around what you found out in the discovery. Because number one, it shows them that you actually care, that you actually paid attention, and people forget. People forget very easily, right? They forget that that problem existed, and you're going to need to remind them and how that you're going to solve them. And also on the other side, use your persuasion skill to help them understand what's going to happen if they don't go on that journey. Because what's the impact of that pain or that problem that you found in the discovery process? So the discovery is everything. Without it, you're like just pressing play on demo, saying the same thing that's in your script or your playbook, or I mean, it's huge.
And what's interesting is how many people still do that. How many people are still doing the same demo over and over again? They get into the sales mode. They get into the, like, this is the monologue I give everybody, versus customizing it and tailoring it in every way through the end of the sale, when the sale is done, post-sale. Like literally, I'm like you, I'm a huge note-taking, note hander offer person. Like when I make a sale, if there's some kind of fulfillment, account management, some kind of thing after that, what I discovered should be handed to the next team on the service side so that they don't have to do the conversation again. And they know exactly why this person bought. And it's funny, you say like, you've got to remind them because people forget. And a lot of sellers think, oh, well, of course they know what their issue is. We already talked about it. If they knew what their issue was, they would have called you and said, I have this problem. I need your solution. Here's my credit card. Let's go. Right? You're an order taker, which is fine. But for everything else, it takes a salesperson, a professional.
There's so many things about what you just said that are important. Is the next person in fulfillment, whether that's customer success, onboarding, support, they need to have transparency of that stuff. And there's a few little key things that you can use to really drive that relationship to the next level that show that you paid attention to discovery. So number one, in your sales talk track or in your demo, a lot of people are doing demos, you know, if you're in B2B SaaS or whatever it is, right? Is don't show them stuff that they specifically said they don't care about or that they're not going to use. Okay. But there's something you have to do with this. Don't just not show them it. Make a point of saying, hey, here's this particular feature, but I know that when we talked, you mentioned that wasn't relevant to you. So we're going to skip past that, right? Because if you just skip past it without acknowledging it, you're not really helping yourself persuade them to go to the next level, to the next stage, to the next step with you, right? Because a lot of times people miss the mark on this is, let's give them the benefit of the doubt. Let's say they do a half decent job and they only show them the stuff that they know is going to fix their problem or that they mentioned they have interest in. But you got to do better than that. You also got to acknowledge the fact that you're skipping past or you're not doing certain things or you're not showing them certain things or just to revalidate it as well, right? So, hey, I know when we talked, you mentioned you wouldn't use this because of this reason. Is that true? Yes, it is. Great. Let's skip past this. I don't want to waste your time. Let's just dig right into the things that matter most to you. So those are some tricks that you can use to your benefit based on you doing a good discovery.
And it's so important. And what that's going to show them that you listened, also save the time, and also separate you literally from either every other salesperson they've dealt with or the salesperson they are worried about getting stuck dealing with, right? Which is the robot that's monologuing and doing the same demo, which they could have just watched the recording if they had wanted to.
It's such a small thing, but it makes such a big difference because across many industries, most things are commoditized. Like most things, they have many, 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 many options of where they can get whatever it is you do. There's very few things out there that are super unique that you may be the only one doing that. And that's only going to last so long. So with that being said, like you really got to separate yourself from the other 5-6 options that they might be considering. And those small little things are what will make the biggest difference. Even if you're higher on price, they're going to be like, hey, Jason really listened to what we need. And that makes me feel like we're going to have a great experience. Therefore, even though he's maybe 10 or 20% higher, we're going to go with him.
Yep. And it comes down to the relationship, the professionalism, and how much you listened, which is a result of caring, which goes back to your point about ABH always being helping and focusing on caring. And it's interesting because I've always lived in the world of B2C. You're in the world of B2B, which now as a consultant, I have a lot of clients in that realm. And then there's H to H, which it just doesn't matter. It's human to human. I'm a human. You're a human. I want to help you. It's about two people trying to figure this whole mess out.
Yeah.
So what are you seeing? Because you have an interesting perspective. So you have your business, your sales career, you've been doing this for a long time, and you have this, obviously, I'm going to put it under my own term of the authentic persuasion. Like what you do is really focused on helping people, but you're also dealing with businesses. So you're in both lands, right? Your own sales land with your team and then others. What are you seeing other businesses doing well these days, not doing well on the sales side?
All right. So not doing well. Let's start with that. Yeah. I mean, technology is great. We all have the fancy tools now to make our jobs easier. And I'm a big advocate for using technology to make things easier. But some people are just frankly are getting lazy and relying on it too much. You know, like the best way to reach people is still the phone, like just calling people. There's too many people that are thinking like if they send enough emails or they send enough LinkedIn DMs, like they're going to fill up their calendar with meetings and it's just not enough. And they're not doing it in a very personalized way, right? They're just trying to scale. They're using templates. They are doing what other people are doing. They're not making it personal. And there's a place for your high volume activities, whatever that looks like. And yeah, you can't personalize those as much. But if it's a quality relationship, you really want to stand out different and do things that people are not doing. Using the phone, sending them a text message, sending them a video, sending them a LinkedIn voice DM, like using all of these channels and trying to show up different than every other message that's just going to be like white noise that they're used to seeing. I'm a big fan of sending people messages and just making them super short and sweet and to the point. Like none of this big vomit of features and benefits and paragraphs and tricks and carrots dangled to try to spark your interest. Like all of that crap is not working. Like buyers are way too smart for that shit. But here's something that we do, and I've seen other people do as well, is ask for feedback. And not just ask for feedback from the business that you win, but ask feedback from the business that you lose. The people that say no, the people that get some way down your sales cycle that don't end up moving forward, and ask it in a way, like from a place where you genuinely care, like, hey, one of our things that we do is people that don't end up signing up. It's like, hey, we dropped the ball. Like we messed up some point because we didn't earn your trust. And we really are trying to get better. And we want to know what we could have done better to make the experience better for you. Something like that. And you'd be surprised just by asking that through an email or through a phone call, sometimes those people actually, believe it or not, get back into your sales funnel.
Well, and that goes along with my number one rule. If anyone pushes me in the corner and says, give me one piece of advice to help my sales career, do the opposite of what everyone else is doing in sales. That's just the number one I would do. And that goes to it, right? Salespeople, it's funny, don't ask for feedback. A lot of salespeople don't want feedback on the positive stuff because they just want that person to go away and never come back. And because if they open up that door, maybe somebody was upset with what they bought or how they bought it or what they paid for because that person is selling, let's say, in an old school way. And then there's the ones that didn't buy. And I think that's huge because that's what other professionals would do. Look at a professional athlete. They're watching game footage, not just when they win and make the game-winning point. It's the losses and the beatings. And that's when they're looking at it and going, what did I do wrong? How do I win next time? How do I play my best? And that's what most salespeople, they don't want to acknowledge. And they definitely don't want to hear it from the prospective customer.
I think you nailed it. But that feedback is more valuable. Yeah. It's more valuable than the feedback from the people that said yes. They said yes. I mean, what are they going to tell you? Oh, you did a great job. Like you were the best option. The feedback is a little biased. They're not your customer. They're going to give you honest feedback like, hey, you were annoying. You called me too much.
Right. Or you asked me a bunch of questions that didn't seem important, and then you didn't listen, and you told me about all these stupid features that I don't care about.
Right.
And despite what Colin said to do, you did it anyway. And yeah.
Exactly. And what's interesting is you start to hear a lot of the same stuff, and then you hear it enough times and you're like, oh, maybe I should change that. Maybe I should do something differently. So that is something where I think people are really winning and standing out. Like, I got an email today from a company that we used to use for sending cold emails, and it was from the founder. And he's like, hey, we're not even trying to get your business back, but we just want to know why you left and how we can be better. And it was really that simple. And it was like, that's the kind of company you want to do business with, because it shows that they actually care enough to ask.
And if it's just a tactic and they're just doing it to try to get you back in the funnel, and whatever your issue is, they fix and it works for you, then that's great as well, because you want your solution. As a customer, all I care about is my solution to my problem or my goal.
Yeah. And if they are using it as a tactic, it works great. And here's the interesting thing about it. So when we ask for this type of feedback, because it's something that we do, a lot of times people were just maybe confused about something, or there wasn't like really good clarity around something, or they on their own, maybe they weren't listening, they weren't paying attention, and they made some sort of assumption along the way that just made them ghost the sales rep, stop taking the calls, not sign the deal. And it could be because there was a crappy discovery done, or something didn't get uncovered in discovery, or it could be a number of reasons. But a lot of times they end up back in the sales funnel, or you learn something that's of extreme value that you can make tweaks and changes to your process, your script, your demo, or whatever to win more deals in the future.
Yeah.
And one last thing I'll say on this topic is a lot of salespeople, after they take shit personal. Right. So if somebody ghosted them, somebody didn't sign the deal, they've called them 20 times, they didn't reply, whatever the case is, they're upset. Right. And I get it. I've been there. I understand exactly what that feels like. So the last thing they want to do is go, hey, Jason, like, you ghosted me. I called you 20 times. You didn't pick up my calls. I left you many voicemails. You told me you were going to sign. I already spent the money because I thought I was getting the commission. Like, how can I be better? Right. Like, they don't want to reach out to those people. They see them come up in the CRM and they just skip past them. Oh, that guy again. And it's like, if you come from a genuine place of like, hey, I want to get better, some interesting things happen, and both are of value. You either learn something or you get them back in the funnel.
Yeah. And I think that's the key. I mean, you're either learning something, getting them back. There is no failure, right? It's just learning, figuring out how to get better and better over time, getting that feedback. And yeah, if there is a pattern, if there's enough of it, it's you. And I think there's a balance. The only thing I would say is some people take it personal. I think it's also where it goes into this feedback portion, which it is good to take it personal, where it is you. You did something, right? Like, you're taking it personal, like maybe they offended you and you had all your hopes on this, but take it personal as in, is there a chance that it was something you did or didn't do? And how can you adjust? Now, sometimes it's just them. It's life. They got crap going on their side. It's nothing to do with you. It just happens. But like, when is it you? I think that's key. And I think that's a game changer. I think that's a big difference between a sales professional, someone who's just playing pickup sales and hoping they can get NBA money for YMCA tactics.
Yeah. I like that analogy. Take it personally as like an opportunity to learn something, right? To get better. But don't take it personally as in like they were out to make your life difficult. There's a difference.
Exactly. Yeah. You got to take it personal and then take responsibility and then hold yourself accountable and not rely on others. So let's shift a little bit. What did you want to be when you grew up?
Interesting question. I don't have a simple answer for you, but I'll give you the short version that will answer your question. I grew up pretty poor.
Right.
So I was raised by a single mom who worked as a waitress. My father was never around and life was tough. We had food stamps and we ate government cheese, like for real. And I learned some sales skills early on. I played sports, and if I wanted to get new shoes, I had to figure out a way to like earn to get shoes, because it wasn't in the budget. Like, it was hard enough just to pay the bills. So I don't really know that I had any specific thing that I knew I like wanted to be. I just knew that I didn't want to live like that. I just didn't want to be poor. Like not necessarily poor, but I didn't want to be struggling like check to check and in that rut. I frankly barely finished high school, pretty much dropped out and then got my credits. Definitely didn't go to college. And my first job young was lugging around furniture. That's what I did. I drove around a truck for the Salvation Army, like picking up furniture that was donations that they like resold. And it was minimum wage. Plus, you know, if you were great with people and nice and went the extra mile and they'd give you some tips, that was something you could get really excited about. But I knew that that was like going to be a struggle, right? That wasn't a career. Like that wasn't going to take me anywhere. And I got my first sales job and I literally worked my ass off to make something out of it. I was just so grateful for the opportunity that I worked 12-hour days. I was the first one in, last one to leave, got my list ready on the weekends. And that's where it all started for me.
First off, I appreciate your honesty and transparency, which I know you have some of this on your bio, but hearing you say it and sharing it and being willing to say it, I think that's so amazing, which I appreciate very much. And then the thing that's interesting is I'm hearing you talk. I mean, it's easy to say, okay, here's what I wanted to be when I grow up. But when you're in that survival mode or you're worried about survival, you can't think that far, right? You're just hoping for stability or success. Like, it's not even like, if I do this, it's like, I just want to get out of this situation, which is fascinating because that applies to a lot of people. I know in my life, many times I've been back in that survival mode where it's like, I can't think beyond this week because your brain can't do it. This time right now with COVID and pandemic and economics and all kinds of things, I'm sure there's a lot of people out there in that same mode. It's like, what do you want to be when you grow up? You could be in your 30s or 40s. It's like, I have no idea. I got to make it that far.
Yeah. And there were some tough times when I was young, like there's times where we couldn't pay the rent. Like we got evicted and it was like, we just need to pay the rent. And that's as far as you're looking ahead. But I'll tell you this, there's not many people that are like dressing up as salesmen as kids saying, I want to be a salesman.
Exactly. Like, that's, you know, the funny part right now.
Oh yeah. You've interviewed enough salespeople and I have as well, where it's like, I would say 99% of the time, the story is like, I wanted to do this, which is your story as well, right? Then I hated it or it didn't work out or the economy sucked and I got into sales. And I heard the very first story ever the other day where it's like, oh, I took sales courses in college and that's how I got into sales.
I think that's fascinating now that that's a thing. That's a topic for a whole nother. And it's interesting too, because as a non-planned salesperson like myself and a resistant salesperson like most people who fall into it, you hear the stories like a Gary Vee where it's like, what, he's 6 years old ripping people's flowers out of the yard, selling it to back to them, right? So he can make money and that's his sales mode. And you look at that and go, well, if I'm not on that path, then I'm never going to be successful in sales. When in fact, he's really good because he's authentic with it. Most people, they would rather buy from someone like you or myself, where it's like, hey, that's not our lifelong goal, wasn't to sell crap to people, right?
No, definitely not. But I can tell you this, the first time that I made a sizable sale, I was like, this is it for me. Like, this is what I'm meant to do. And I want more of it. And I love everything about it. And I wouldn't change any of it, including the tough stuff, including like the difficult times in my sales career, including the difficult times as a kid growing up, because all of that tough stuff is what molds you into who you are today to be able to take on and do whatever it is that you do.
Which is why I will never ask you or pretty much any other guest, hey, if you could go back, what would you change about things? Because it's just made you who you are, right?
That's the,
you know, you don't know where you would go if something changed. Like, what would you be doing and where would your life go?
And you can get to a place where you can, as a salesperson or just an individual, where it's like you actually appreciate those things. You appreciate those difficult moments because you just know that like, okay, that sucked. It hurt. Didn't feel good, didn't like it, but what did I learn from it? And hopefully I'll never do it again.
Yep, make yourself tough. At this point in your life, what's your definition of success?
For a long time, I've had a hard time just working too much, right? Because I just love showing up. And honestly, I have like a way better life than I could have ever imagined. So for me, like I really want to spend more time with my family. Like, I'm pretty good about, like, I get up early, I'm home early, I spend time with my kids, I do all of these things. I do what I do every day so that I can do that. And for me, it's all about just providing a great life for my wife and my three kids and trying to enjoy it as much as possible. Cause sometimes it's like really hard to put the phone down. I still really struggle with that. Like, sometimes I literally have to turn it off, put it in the drawer, like take my watch off. And it's like, I need to be present with my family.
Yeah.
So being able to kind of get better at that and enjoy that more is really what success looks for me now.
I love it. Last question, the journey or the destination?
Oh, the journey. The destination could change. The destination is, once you're there, then what? Like, the journey is what I enjoy. Like, I've pretty much founded four different companies, right? And it's kind of like, it says it all. Like, you basically get there and it's like, okay, now I'm bored. Like, I want to get back to like the hard now stuff. Now I want to get back to startup mode. That's good. That was fun. Now what? Like, let me start back at like zero and build something because that's what I enjoy.
Yeah. And prove that you can build some value, have fun on the journey.
Yeah.
Play the game, right?
Yeah. Because it gets boring after a while.
Yeah.
And I think that maybe it's like, hey, I want to prove that I still can. I don't know. I enjoy it. I like the tough, like early stage startup grind, hustle, like grit. That stuff is fun.
I love it. So Colin, you've got a new podcast. So you had one before, Shifted, the Sales Hustle by Salescast, right? Yes. Salescast.co for that side of things, right?
Yes.
And then also you're super active on LinkedIn. I love the fact that you're LinkedIn and it's /Colin-Sales Hustle. That's really cool. Where else should people find you, find what you're working on?
Yeah, I mean, LinkedIn is the best place for sure. I'm pretty active on that platform. I'm trying to get more active on other platforms, but LinkedIn's my playground. So you can look me up there, check out Sales Hustle on all of the podcast platforms. And I'd say those are the two best places. I'm more than happy to talk sales, do anything with anybody. They can text me 424-367-6966. You will actually reach me and not a bot. And I'm happy to chat with anybody, talk about anything at all.
And I will confirm that that is him via text and that he will talk to anybody about sales because we've chatted many times. Colin, thanks again for coming on the Authentic Persuasion Show and sharing your wisdom and sharing the ABH mode. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks for tuning into the Authentic Persuasion Show. If you found value in this episode, please do two things. Subscribe so you can get each new episode and share this episode with anyone else you know in sales. Together, we can help shift the way sales is done. And if you want to find out more information about how to transform your sales career, or you want help with shifting your sales team from order takers to quota breakers, go to jasoncutter.com. Don't forget that everything in life is sales, and I will catch you on the next episode of the Authentic Persuasion Show.